From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, another Super Tuesday. On the Republican side, Donald Trump takes Florida, Illinois, North Carolina.
We're going to go forward, and we're going to win. But more importantly, we're going to win for the country. We're going to win, 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 and we're not stopping. We're going to have great victories for our country. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
And Hillary Clinton wins big with Democrats.
We are moving closer to securing the Democratic Party nomination and winning this election in November.
Lots of winning talk there. There were losses, too. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are we now looking at a Trump-Clinton matchup this fall? What does that mean? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining us from Washington is Robert Costa, national political reporter for The Washington Post, following the Republicans. Robert, welcome back to On Point. Wonderful to have you today.
Great to join you, Tom.
And from Washington, Ken Thomas joins us, political reporter for the Associated Press, following the Democratic Party race. Ken Thomas, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
From Cleveland, Ohio, Claire Malone joins us, senior political writer for 538, the polling, number-crunching analysis group that is all over this election season. Claire, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
So here we are. Let's start with Hillary Clinton. We talk about Donald Trump all the time, and we'll talk about him plenty today. But here was Hillary Clinton, less than 5 miles from his mansion, Mar-a-Lago, there in Palm Beach, West Palm Beach, she was in last night, celebrating her multiple victories.
Thank you, Florida. Thank you, North Carolina. Thank you, Ohio. You know, although we're waiting for final results in Illinois and Missouri, we know we will add to our delegate lead to roughly 300 with over 2 million more votes nationwide.
There's a bunch of numbers. Claire Malone, what happened to the Michigan wave here? You've looked into these Clinton victories. This was a big night for her. She got a big shock last week in Michigan. What happened here, Claire?
Yeah, I mean, she's, you know, it's probably going to be a sweep for her for last night. Michigan, I think, you know, the Clinton team, I think, was worried that Ohio could go the same way as Michigan. They share a lot of similar DNA. They're both Rust Belt states. But I think what we see is that, you know, she sort of performed as expected in Ohio, and it's looking more and more like Michigan was an aberration. You know, there are several factors that we don't know for sure why Clinton won in Ohio, but it seems more, you know, more likely that people were perhaps people who had maybe crossed over and voted for Sanders said, "Hey, I actually want to go back and vote for Clinton." She actually won the white vote in Ohio, which Sanders had won in Michigan. So that seemed to make a difference. And she also won pretty crucially on the question of trade. If voters were really worried about the trade issue in Michigan, Sanders had won those voters. And in Ohio, Clinton won them. And that seemed to be a big thing for her.
Ken Thomas, how do you interpret that? Bernie seemed to have a lock on the trade issue in Michigan. Why would it flip the other way in Ohio? They do tons of auto and auto parts manufacturing there. It's not such a different industrial profile.
Well, I think she maybe clarified her economic message in the past week. I think she has argued in over the last few weeks that she has a much more comprehensive approach to creating manufacturing jobs and protecting those jobs, and that she would bring a lot more to the table if she's president, that you can't just look at this only through the lens of a trade deal, but there's a lot more going on here.
We talked with Tad Devine last week, a top strategist for the Bernie Sanders campaign. He talked with NPR's Morning Edition today. We talked to him after the Michigan win. Told NPR today, Sanders can still win the Democratic nomination, but it sounds like threading a needle.
The second half of the process, I think, for Bernie Sanders is going to look as good as the first half of the process looked for Hillary Clinton. So I think we can make up the delegate advantage she has right now, and I think we have a path to the nomination.
The second half of the map. Claire, you're looking at the map. Do you see that second half of the primary season path that Tad Devine is describing for Bernie Sanders?
It is not an impossibility, but it is very difficult. So we've sort of projected out how well Bernie Sanders would need to do in the coming states. And he would need to win by an average of 58 points. And there are also sort of Clinton superdelegates to worry about. So, you know, winning Ohio would have been a great boon for him. But the math is very difficult for Sanders to overcome at this point.
Last night he had 33% in Florida, 49% in Illinois, 41% North Carolina, 43% in Ohio. Is there some monster out there that he could take, California or something else, that would swing it if he took it big his way, Claire?
There's no, I mean, you know, I think the Democratic side has proportional allotment of delegates in states, so he could, you know, try to, yeah, you know, he could win a couple big states, but that would be, you know, it would be going very much faster pace than he's been going in picking up delegates so far. So nothing is impossible. Never say die. But, you know, I'm not quite sure that I see it for Sanders necessarily.
He was still out there with a stemwinder version of his stump speech last night in Phoenix, Arizona, already looking ahead, looking past these states, hitting Clinton on her speeches, paid speeches for Wall Street.
If you're going to give a speech for $225,000, it must be a really great speech. And if it's such a great speech, all of America should be able to read it.
Robert Costa, is the GOP watching this Democratic race closely, or is it all about what's going on inside their own boundaries, if there still are boundaries to the GOP, Robert?
They are watching it closely, especially party officials speaking to them this morning and before the primary. You get the sense that the Republican Party senses Hillary Clinton has to move to the left to compete with Bernie Sanders, and that this is a protracted primary fight for her. They're also taking some cues from both Trump and Sanders, understanding that regardless of who wins the Republican nomination, they have to deeply consider the economic angst that's out there in the electorate broadly, both Democrats and Republicans, and be able to respond to it and to try to maybe even attract some Sanders voters should Clinton clinch the nomination.
But surely they are wrapped around their own race in a big way this year. We had Donald Trump last night saying he's just making the Republican Party bigger and greater. Here he was in Palm Beach, Florida.
Paul Ryan called me the other day, tremendous call. I spoke with Mitch McConnell today. We had a great conversation. The fact is, we have to bring our party together. We have to bring it together. We have something happening that actually makes the Republican Party probably the biggest political story anywhere in the world.
We have to bring the Republican Party together. Is there any sign at this point, Robert Costa, that Donald Trump is doing that?
Here in Washington, there's a mixed view on Trump. There's a lot of hope among elected officials, those members of the House, members of the Senate up for re-election, that when they look at the record turnout in these Republican primaries and the droves of white working class people and new voters of all stripes who are coming out for Trump, they see some glimmers of optimism. They think Trump, if he could cool down his rhetoric, if he was able to still bring out new people, he could be someone who could bring the party together. But there's just still a lot of wariness. Trump is reaching out to party leaders, but he's not necessarily expanding his inner circle or bringing in people from the party to help him out. But at least at this point, they see some hope in that he's having conversations.
Conversations, but what? So many of the conversations that we've heard about are those who desperately want to have somebody in there. And you've had people saying straight up, you know, he's not got the right cut, despite all the backing that he's got, that in his language and his demagoguery, some Republicans are saying, never mind the rest, in his hesitance to really tamp down on the violence that we've seen emerge at his rallies. There seems to be some nut of Republicans, and not a small one, tell me if I'm wrong, Bob, who's really, really upset by the notion of him taking this.
The Never Trump movement, the anti-Trump movement, is certainly a significant block in the GOP at the moment. But they've been rattled by what happened on Tuesday night, because the anti-Trump super PACs poured money into Florida and Illinois and got very little in return. There's a sense that if they did want to mount a third-party bid, they'd have to have some kind of consensus candidate who was ideological, who could get these anti-Trump people who were more movement activists together. Mitt Romney seems to be aiming to be maybe that candidate by his entry into the discussion, but he's not entirely popular on the right. Ted Cruz has really struggled to compete with Trump, and though he's picking up delegates, he's not entirely sweeping across the country, and he still has a likability problem, even among some quarters on the right who are aligned with him ideologically. So you have a movement. There is a movement out there, but you have the party leadership, the elected officials, wondering, is it time to reconcile with Trump because nothing seems to really work? But at the same time, if they can keep his delegate count below 1,200, they believe if it comes to a convention floor on a second ballot, maybe someone could step into the fray. That's why you had Speaker Boehner in the last day come out and say he'd maybe support Speaker Ryan, his successor in the House, as that kind of pick, someone who could come in on a second ballot. But at this moment, it all depends on the threshold for Trump. If Trump comes into the convention in Cleveland in July with over 1,000 delegates, maybe even over 1,100 delegates, he will be in a position with the political capital and the delegates to be the nominee. It'll be very hard to take it away from him.
Claire, if we end up with Trump and Clinton, do you see then a traditional kind of election season finally emerging here after what Marco Rubio called as the tsunami of this primary politics so far? Do we settle back into a more familiar framework, or are we still in some new terrain if it's Trump-Clinton?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so... It's so hard to do hypotheticals in this race still because
it's not so hypothetical anymore. I mean, they're mounting their delegate counts anyway.
Sure. I mean, I will say that, you know, Rubio dropping out of the race is actually fairly good news for Cruz. I mean, you know, I'm looking at a Morning Consult survey that says 47% of Rubio supporters would make their way over to Cruz's side. So, you know, there still is, you know, something to be said for it. It still could be very hotly contested. But in the framework of a Trump-Clinton general election, I think it'll obviously be a more traditional path because it's two people. But there's also, you know, things to look at where, you know, I'm in Ohio right now, and it could be that Trump takes some of those white Democrats that Clinton has counted on.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a second Super Tuesday yesterday. The big wins for Trump and Clinton, Kasich's Ohio, Rubio's step aside, step out, and the Sanders and Cruz paths right now in this big primary season. You can join us this hour. Are you for Trump or for anything but Trump in the GOP? Could Kasich be the alternative? Can Cruz unite the party somehow? Sanders people, do you still see a way? What does it mean that Ohio, Illinois, more went Clinton? And Clinton people, is it yours now? And should Hillary stick with the Sanders sound that she's had lately or go center, centrist? Robert Costa is with us, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Ken Thomas with the Associated Press covering Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Claire Malone is here. She's out of Cleveland, Ohio today, senior political writer for 538, watching all the numbers and patterns here. Here's a guy who brought home a big victory last night in his home state, John Kasich, saying he wouldn't take a low road to the high office.
I want to remind you again tonight that I will not take the low road to the highest office in the land.
Can't stack up that 1,237 number of delegates, but still he sees a way when the Republicans hold their convention, he said, in Cleveland.
We are going to go all the way to Cleveland and secure the Republican nomination.
Okay, Robert Costa, maybe. First, how significant that John Kasich hung on to Ohio last night for this overall race, and then what's the scenario in which he might, by some means, be a player in Cleveland?
Mathematically, with the delegates, it doesn't mean much, but he got a significant bounce, and timing's everything in politics. And now the Republican establishment, with the departure of Senator Rubio, is looking for their own horse, another horse. And Kasich standing there as someone who has deep relationships in Washington from his time in the House, a swing state governor, moderate in his pitch, different than Cruz and Trump. I think what's important to watch with Kasich now is, can he turn his strong second place in Michigan and his victory at Ohio into some kind of sustained campaign heading into the convention so he could actually make a play to be a consensus pick on the floor? And the states to watch on the calendar coming up are Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Indiana, those Rust Belt states that have been scarred by some of the globalization and its effects in trade. And those are the states where Kasich hopes to do well and put together a coalition.
Let's say that he comes into the convention. Donald Trump is still shy of the 1,237 magic number of delegates, but Kasich is hundreds of delegates behind him. Do you think, Robert, that the GOP would have the chutzpah
to, if Trump doesn't get it on a first ballot, to turn to somebody who's way, way behind him, or as you say, not even on the field at the moment, and put it in their hands?
At this point, it's hard to say. Based on my reporting, so much is going to depend on the discipline of Trump should he really emerge as the likely nominee. And if he asserts himself as someone who is able to bring out people in record numbers and is generally not going to turn off all suburban voters, it's going to be hard to see if he has a strong delegate count how he's really pushed away at the convention. And remember, Trump has always talked about how he's a deal maker. He's not also driven by ideology. And he's had a better relationship with Kasich than with most of his rivals. And you could see Trump reaching out to someone like Kasich to make sure he gets the nomination, maybe putting someone like Kasich on the ticket.
There was I want to look at that. There was a lot of that deal talk last night in Palm Beach, where he met at his luxury resort with those who were invited in. Lots of gold on the walls and chandeliers in the air. And Donald Trump talking, have I got a deal for you?
We're going to make the best trade deals you've ever seen. We've got such endorsements from Carl Icahn and the smartest people in business. And these people are going to be negotiating our deals, and they're the best in the world. We have the best business people in the world. They're going to know, we're going to have such great deals. We're going to do so good with trade.
Sounds just like all smiles and deals there. But of course, if it's him, the Democrats are not going to let go of the long record of comments and interactions that have already been there. It was Bernie Sanders last night in Phoenix, Arizona, going after Trump.
What Trump is about and other demagogues have always been about is scapegoating minorities, turning one group against another group. But we are too smart to fall for that.
Ken Thomas, you cover the Democrats. How are they looking at Donald Trump? He may change his tone. He certainly is very attuned to changes in the political weather. But can he get away from the sort of brand that he's built in the months of this primary season?
Well, I think that Democrats feel like he's a very unpredictable figure right now. So I don't think anyone in the party is overly confident. There is some concern that he could change the map and perhaps compete in states like Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, states that have been in the Democratic column in the past. But I would say, in terms of how they go about taking on Trump, there's three main lanes here.
Mm-hmm.
The first is temperament. I think you heard Hillary Clinton touch upon that last night. She said a commander in chief has to be able to defend our country, not embarrass it. I think there's this sense that Democrats will try to say, is this the person you'd want in charge of the nuclear codes? The second lane, I would say, is some of these comments that he's made about women and minorities during the campaign, that those comments can be re-aired and presented to swing state voters. And that's something that would likely mobilize women and minorities. And then the third part, I think, is his business practices and his business background. Democrats have told me that they don't feel like that's something that's been well vetted, and there's a lot that they can learn and find out about. And, I think if you're looking for an analogy, look to how Democrats took on Mitt Romney in 2012. There was a real litigation of his business practices in the spring of 2012, and I think we're likely to see that in the months ahead.
Hillary Clinton starting in on a little bit of that last night in Florida on what minorities, immigrants in this case, Muslims, torture.
When we hear a candidate for president call for rounding up 12 million immigrants, banning all Muslims from entering the United States, when he embraces torture, that doesn't make him strong. It makes him wrong.
Hillary Clinton last night with a little taste of where she might go, if it is Clinton v. Trump. Let's go to our listeners, Columbia, Kentucky. Gary's calling. Hi, Gary, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I see Obama, Trump supporter.
All right.
But I think all he's got to do to Walton to the White House is just to engage his brain before he activates his tongue. And that's been a lot of his problems, I think. Now, Hillary, I just don't trust her. I think she's a documented prevaricator What happened at Benghazi? I would just like to know what she was doing when those people were asking for help. She had the means. She had the opportunity, and she chose not to take it.
And where would you like to see Donald Trump, you know, pipe down or exercise more control, Gary?
Well, I just think that a lot of times he speaks off the cuff without thinking. To me, I mean, you know, I'm not a mental heavyweight myself, but outside looking in, he just needs to think before he talks, and I think he'd be a lot better off. I think there's a lot more to him than meets the eye, and I really don't think he's a racist or a bigot or anything like that. I just think he just needs to think before he speaks.
Gary, we got it. I mean, I don't know if that's thoughtlessness or very thoughtful, Robert Costa. Donald Trump has done very well with his volatile kind of comments in this campaign season. They set him apart. They put him out front. They got people's attention. He's sitting in almost the catbird seat now.
He is. And I just got back from a long trip to Florida to cover that primary. And everywhere I went to see Trump, there was an attraction to him among his supporters, not because of his positions necessarily, even on immigration or trade, but because of his penchant for political incorrectness, his ability to clash with the media and almost do the opposite of what is usually done in polite company. And that excites his supporters, who think the Republican Party in the Obama era has not been combative enough. And for someone who's choosing between Trump and Cruz, to them, Cruz is an insider, even though he's an outsider in Washington. And they want someone totally new to not only upend the table of the Republican Party, but to upend the United States.
It was Trump on MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews. This was just the end of last week, talking along those lines, you know, sort of going with the anger theme. Anger, anger, anger.
You have so much anger in the country. I mean, it's just anger in the country. And it's not directed at, I don't think it's directed at me or anything. It's just directed at what's been going on for years. And it's on both sides.
And Donald Trump very willing to aim that anger. Here he was near the end of his speech in Palm Beach last night, calling the reporters, lots of them at the back of the hall, disgusting.
Disgusting reporters, horrible people. Sure. Some are nice. Some are nice. Some really disgusting people back there, that I have to think.
Robert Costa, is this a guy who really can back off of that? Our caller Gary says, you know, think before you speak. But this has worked, and it seems to come very naturally to Trump. Single out some group, reporters in the hall, or you name it, an ethnic minority or religious minority, and go after him.
We'll have to see in a general election how it would play out. But this is a strange moment in America, and When you look at suburban voters in Pennsylvania and Illinois and the I-4 corridor of Florida, all places I've been recently, places you would think where Trump would normally be an outside figure, someone who would be on the fringes, is being considered, and not just by people who are conservative activists. Actually, most of his crowds are only dotted with activists. It's insurance salesmen and teachers and white collar and blue collar. And the biggest trait I've found in a Trump voter, it's people who are politically disengaged. I don't like the term low information. It's people who aren't even really seeking information but are somehow coming back to politics because of Trump and his celebrity and the way his candidacy has ascended. And so they don't listen to the normal rules or follow the normal rules about what's right, what's wrong. They've been disengaged, they're now engaged, and they're still listening. And that makes them a potent force in American politics and in America at large. But still, there's a lot of concerns about how could it be sustained, and can he really put together a coalition that can win the necessary delegates in a general?
It's going to matter a lot how Ted Cruz appeals or doesn't appeal to those people. It wasn't a great night for him last night. I mean, he put some more delegates on the board, but in Houston, in Texas, you know, he again going to that kind of, hey, we've got to have conservative principles at work here. Here a swipe here at Donald Trump, Ted Cruz.
You know, it's easy to talk about making America great again. You can even print that on a baseball cap. But the critical question is whether you understand the principles and values that made America great in the first place.
Well, but will that sell for Ted Cruz around the country? Roy in Abilene, Texas. Roy, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, when I got out of Vietnam, I voted for Nixon. I've been a lifetime Republican ever since. Okay. Nixon got us out of Vietnam. He got us on good terms with the Chinese and the Russians. And I don't think Donald Trump's going to do that. But I understand the anger because veterans like myself, we're having difficulties getting any kind of benefits through the VA, and we're frustrated that our members of Congress who might serve one term and then get lifetime benefits and they're treated like royalty, then they become lobbyists for the Chinese and other special interest groups. So that's what the frustration is for a lot of us, although I am supporting Kasich.
So, I mean, Donald Trump talks about veterans a lot and veterans benefits, but last night, I don't know, you're Kasich, not Trump, because you want somebody who's going to blow things up, or you want somebody who can unite, or why, Roy?
Well, I'm concerned that Donald Trump, well, he said a comment that he would go in and bomb the hell out of them, and I forgot who that was, but he doesn't have any ability for diplomacy skills, tact, or he doesn't have the temperament, and I think he's going to get us into more conflicts, and more kids are going to die and become disabled like myself. They're going to come back home, and they're not going to get the benefits they need. So I'm avoiding Trump because of those specific reasons.
What if it came down, what if Trump is the nominee, and your man Kasich doesn't make it, and it's Trump v. Clinton? Would you go with Trump, or would you go with Clinton?
My wife and I had discussed this. She said she might vote for Hillary. I would write in Jeb Bush, though, before I vote for Trump.
Roy, I appreciate your call. I mean, Claire Malone, if there's a path here for someone other than Trump, and maybe even a little bit for Hillary in there, there's the angle on it. Anger fully acknowledged and felt there, but still that hesitance that doesn't want to go with the volatile Mr. Trump.
Sure. You know, I'm looking at, I think that the conversation that caller and his wife just had is something that, you know, when I've been talking to voters, a lot of people are using when I offer that scenario, Trump v. Clinton, they say, well, I'd have to choose between the lesser of two evils. So I think a lot of people don't feel really satisfied with those choices. I'm looking at an NBC News Wall Street Journal poll that puts Trump head to head with Clinton, and it has Clinton winning. 47%. The average is 47% for Clinton, 41% for Trump. And I think it's, you know, I think that a lot of the callers have sort of been voicing this idea that, you know, he shoots from the hip a little bit, and maybe that's not so great. But I think we've also seen Trump be able to pull back and, when he wants to, be the gracious winner. So it's a little bit of a wink to, you know, maybe to the media. And I think he plays the media card really well. I mean, there's a Gallup survey 2 years ago said that 40% of Americans don't trust the mainstream media. And that number goes up even more during election years. So I think that, you know, been people sort of are feeling perhaps about the whole thing with violence at rallies of late. You know, I think some people might say, well, why is the media playing up the violence angle now? And actually, we saw Trump usually does worse with late deciding voters. And in the March 15th exit polls, he was actually doing pretty well, or better than he had been with people who are late deciders.
But who's to say it's playing up, Claire? I mean, our history lately is not full of people getting beaten or punched at political rallies. This is something new. Is it the media making it, or is it the actual facts on the ground that are different and deserve attention?
I think it's the facts on the ground. I think it is the facts on the ground. I think that one thing that we're seeing, you know, there's a lot of really interesting political science out there that's developing. One, you know, if you look at a map of Trump support, a lot of it, when Americans are asked in census surveys how they identify ethnically, people who answer American as opposed to, you know, whatever other ethnic background, those are areas where people are voting for Trump. And I think there's something about a reformation or a reclamation of an identity, of an American identity, that certain people, white, working class, in parts of the South, are seeing in Trump. He has some, you know, a lot of Americans might see themselves as conservative. They have a patina of conservatism, but operate as liberals. And Trump kind of has that. There's not an ideological coherence.
Mm-hmm. The reclamation of an identity. Of course, a lot of questions being raised already by Ted Cruz and many others, whether Donald Trump represents the identity that the U.S. wants to have going forward. But people certainly looking for something new in many quarters here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Whether your passion is bold, unconventional, or just plain crazy, you should share it with the world in an unforgettable way. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. And enter offer code ONPOINT at checkout to get 10% off your first purchase.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at all the results from all the voting yesterday. Another big Tuesday. The big wins for Trump and Clinton. Kasich's Ohio victory. Rubio's step aside, step out. The Sanders and Ted Cruz paths now. Robert Costa is with us from the Washington Post. Ken Thomas from the Associated Press. Claire Malone joining us from Cleveland. And 538, you can join us as well. Is this long primary season producing what the country needs? What's the decision that's being made now as these votes roll out that's being set up for November? And, of course, Marco Rubio last night saying he's suspending that campaign. Here he was in Miami.
While it is not God's plan that I be president in 2016 or maybe ever, and while today my campaign is suspended, the fact that I've even come this far is evidence of how special America truly is.
And warning as he went of the politics of resentment, of hate.
The politics of resentment against other people will not just leave us a fractured party. They're going to leave us a fractured nation. They're going to leave us as a nation where people literally hate each other because they have different political opinions.
Pretty beautiful speech, I thought, overall, and there in that moment with a pretty tough jab at apparently Donald Trump. Adam in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love the show.
Thank you.
I personally feel that Sanders should drop out of the race. Claire already mentioned this. There's essentially no path to the nomination for Bernie. So my question for him is this. If Sanders actually cares about progress in the United States and Trump or Cruz are both the antithesis of progressive, then why isn't he taking the only action he has at this point and stepping aside so that his supporters can embrace Clinton like the majority of the party has in the primaries and caucuses so far?
Adam, let us look at it. Question there from Pittsburgh, Ken Thomas. I mean, you know, one answer is he's got a lot of supporters who don't want him out, and another, he may see a narrow path, but his people are still talking about a path. Does him staying in hurt Hillary Clinton, Ken Thomas, or help her?
Well, he has certainly raised a lot of issues, you know, especially on the economy that Democrats care about. You know, I think he's probably made Hillary Clinton a better candidate. You know, the question I think I'm going to be looking at in the next couple of weeks is how hard does he continue to go after Hillary Clinton on some of these contrasts? You know, in his events, he'll often note that, you know, he doesn't have a super PAC. She does. He voted against the Iraq War. She voted for it. You know, she has support from Wall Street. He doesn't. Mm-hmm. So the question is, does he continue to make that case? Does he continue to, you know, raise issues like trade that might complicate her path in the summertime? But, you know, in terms of just viability, I mean, I think they look at the calendar and they still see opportunities. And, you know, the bottom line is they're raising a lot of money. And usually presidential campaigns don't just decide to end. They tend to just run out of money, and that's why they get out. And that doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon with Sanders.
And, of course, Bernie Sanders, a true believer in his message and maybe looking for every opportunity to keep it up there. Hillary Clinton still seemed to have him very much on her mind last night in West Palm Beach, saying every candidate should have clear policy plans, seemed to be kind of a jab at Sanders with big ideas, but maybe not by her lights anyway, clear policy plans.
We're going to stand up for American workers and make sure no one takes advantage of us, not China, not Wall Street, and not overpaid corporate executives. Now, look, of course, every candidate makes promises like this. But every candidate owes it to you to be clear and direct about what our plans will cost and how we're going to make them work.
Interesting there, Claire Malone, a bunch of sort of Bernie-sounding lines and then turning around and say, where's the beef on how it's going to actually work? The Bernie sound and the anti-Bernie sound in one clip.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think if we know one thing about this election, it hasn't necessarily been driven by issue plans. I mean, you know, I think this is a very personality-driven election. And you know, to be fair, Clinton, when she ran against Obama, stayed in for a very long time. And I think in some ways, Sanders never expected to do this well. I think he's pleasantly surprised. I think he's, you know, impassioned. He has lots of supporters. And I tend to think that he'll stay in for a while just because, you know, he is a true believer in this message and he has pulled Clinton to the left. And now she's sort of making those practicality arguments, which with the rise of Donald Trump might play very well with Democratic voters looking ahead to the next few months.
Kristen in Des Moines, Iowa. Kristen, thank you for calling. You're on.
Thanks, Tom. So I'm a longtime Bernie supporter. I caucused for him, but I'm starting to come around to, you know, I'm becoming resigned that Hillary's probably going to become the nominee. My concern is that she is primarily getting her big wins in states that don't go blue during the general elections. They go red. Can she realistically, you know, get those votes when it comes to the general?
What is the sort of a distribution of her support? Claire, what about it? Is she getting what she needs in support in the right places that would add up in a general election? I mean, you cite the poll, national polling, that shows her winning 47% to 41%. But, of course, national polling and electoral maps are a little different.
Yeah. I mean, the primary season and in general and polling as well, it's a little bit of magical thinking. And it's sometimes hard to extrapolate from primary polls how candidates will do in the general election. And I think especially, you know, I think the caller's right that it'll be an interesting general election because there will be some states where perhaps some voting blocks will bleed away from the Democrats. But on the other hand, you know, there is, I think Robert brought this up earlier, or someone did, that certain groups might be, Ken did, that certain groups might be galvanized to get out to the polls, minorities, women. Almost, you know, if 2008 was about the hope and change vote, the Democratic base might be voting out of anger a little bit if Trump is the nominee. So I think it's really hard to tell. And that's not, I don't think that eases the mind of Democratic voters. But I do think it's a little bit of new territory.
Robert Costa, it's so interesting to see how voters sit by one another. I'm looking at my sort of hometown, old hometown of Bloomington, Normal, Illinois, McLean County, sort of almost right in the middle of the state. And there you had yesterday in the Illinois vote, Ted Cruz taking 41-42%. Donald Trump down at 27. On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders 62, Hillary Clinton 37. I mean, you look around, you get all kinds of distributions, in particular locales, that there is not a uniform grade to the way the country's coming out this time at all, Robert.
It's true that the fault lines are all crisscross and messy. And you think someone like a Cruz who's winning in your home area, he's getting some conservatives in certain towns and cities when you look at the map on Tuesday night where it's traditionally conservative or they like someone with experience and someone more of a seasoned hand, maybe averse to Trump. But then you look at a state like North Carolina, thousands of miles away, and Cruz wasn't able to win there. And you see Trump doing well with evangelicals, Cruz doing well among college towns and in the research triangle in North Carolina, but not doing so well in the rural areas where he used to really scoop up votes when he was running for Senate in Texas in 2012. It's just the entire electorate, Republican and Democrat, especially in the primaries, it's hard to read. I mean, Sanders did so well in Michigan, yet couldn't carry that same Rust Belt momentum into Tuesday's contests. And it's just, it makes predicting this very hard. And you find that so much is personalized in this election. It's not so much ideological. It's how voters in different areas are experiencing the economy, feel about the Obama era. And that's just translating in different ways into both primary races.
Of course, in that home turf county in the middle of Illinois, yes, there's Cruz, Mr. Conservative, as opposed to Trump, who's unorthodox. On the other side, though, Bernie Sanders almost nearly 2-1 over Hillary Clinton and with almost as many votes as Ted Cruz. What a map. Nate in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Nate, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you see?
So, I'm 24 in the 18 to 29 year old voting range.
Okay.
And Donald Trump has got my vote for the simple fact that he's doing it on his own. There's no super PAC money involved. He's financially doing it on his own, and that's appealing. People are afraid of the galvanizing rhetoric he's promoting, because it's what has to be done.
Hillary Clinton said last night, come on, you're not going to, you know, send 12 million people out of the country. We're not going to ban all Muslims. It's not realistic. It's not what's going to be done. Do you think the rhetoric is real, Nate?
I would say that it's unrealistic to send 12 million people away. But what I would say is that there's a better means of controlling how we handle this process. And a moratorium on the Muslim community, it's an overstep, but given the current situation of today, it's not far-fetched. It's not unwarranted.
24 years old and going for Trump. And Nate, we hear it out of Oklahoma City. Let me get one more right here from New Haven, Connecticut. Another neck of the woods. Lou, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks, Tom, for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have to say, frankly, I look at everything that's happening right now, and personally, I'm a little bit disappointed in the American public. I'm a little bit disappointed in Nate for supporting a candidate that he thinks is saying things that are unrealistic or dishonest. But I look at Donald Trump, and I see this as an indicator of kind of where American hearts and values are going. Because Donald Trump is absolutely pandering to his audience. He uses a lot of hatred. He uses a lot of kind of divisive language. He also uses a lot of really small words that are easy for people to understand and get behind. There's a science to what he's doing. But I also am a little bit concerned about the other side, because Democrats, progressives all across the country don't seem to, they seem to be looking past the whole dynastic politics issue.
With the Clinton family, you mean, at this point?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. I think that in order for the United States to really deal with the issues that we're faced with right now, we need to start looking at these things in a more realistic, a more inclusive, pragmatic way.
Yeah.
And we need policymakers that actually understand how the process works.
But you don't want another family succession image here.
No, absolutely not. We've had enough. We've had the Clintons in Washington, D.C. for a long time.
Does that put you in the Sanders camp, Lou?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter 100% of the way.
And there's the kind of algebra, there's the calculus that gets you there in Connecticut. Let's go to Ohio. Big night for John Kasich there. Nick in Cleveland. Nick, you're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay, where do you come down, Nick?
So basically, yesterday I voted for Trump based on the sole fact of his financial policies that he wants to put in place. Solely the corporate tax, which I think is really hampering our economy, solely for the fact that we have over $2.5 trillion sitting over shores that can't be reinvested into our country.
Were you weighing anybody else when you voted for Trump? Who else were you thinking about, or was it just one guy on your mind or gal?
Well, it was heavily Trump. I do like Bernie Sanders, his ideas, mainly the social inequality and the prison industrial complex and how it takes advantage of minorities. However, I don't support the fact that he wants to in place a $15 minimum wage. I was a manager at a small business, and there would be no way we'd be able to support a $15 minimum wage, and it would just hurt our business. So that's just an example as to how $15 minimum wages would hurt.
Does it feel weird to you, Nick, that the two candidates that you're interested in here are Trump, the billionaire, on the one hand, with the gold-plated, you know, everything, and Bernie Sanders, the socialist political revolutionary, on the other hand? Does that feel strange to you or not?
I feel very hypocritical thinking of it, about it, you know, but I think every single human being is hypocritical in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I do go to a very liberal college, and I notice that there are a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters here. And I notice that they don't really have an explanation as to why they are Bernie Sanders supporters.
Oh, boy. Give me a call. I can put you in touch with a whole lot who'll talk your ear off. Nick, I appreciate your call. One more from Ohio, Cleveland, where that Republican convention's going to be. Jill, thank you for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. It's so nice to get through. I'm a clear Bernie supporter, and I'm pretty close to Bernie's age, too, so I break that stereotype of old people not supporting him.
Is it time to go with Hillary because she's racking up the delegates? And are you facing the, you know, is it inevitable looking to you now or not?
I'm a radical feminist, too, but I think Bernie could win the general. Hillary's got a lot of points they can attack. She stepped to the left and little more than she had. I'm worried that she might not stay there. I mean, he's as close to the candidate I would have pictured if I could choose another. I like him a lot. And his message is strong. If you see Michael Moore's movie, you'll know that there's another way to live. All over the world, they're doing better than we are. And Bernie can get us closer there.
Jill, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Ken Thomas, Hillary in the general. We've got these polls saying she would beat Trump. Of course, you know, that's in March. And there's a lot to come here. If it's Donald Trump, you know he's going to unloose all kind of attack on anybody will. What about the real sort of cold view of how she does once the trouble starts flying?
Well, it's interesting. You know, if your callers all talk about the concerns of having your sort of typical politician if this is going to be a change election, it might be hard for the most known political brand such as the Clintons to win the White House. But that said, I think they feel like in a matchup against Trump, they'll be able to maintain the Obama coalition of. Women and minority voters. Young voters are certainly a question mark. Bernie Sanders has won huge margins among young people. But I think they can also, attract, suburban women, women who are pro-choice who might be more inclined to support Hillary.
Robert Costa, just 20 seconds here. Can the Republicans keep contemplating this, or at some point do they just panic and break for Trump because he's out front?
Power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. Ultimately, they want it. They want back. They may embrace him.
Watch that space. A big day for him yesterday. John Kasich out there, Ted Cruz out there giving it their best. But it was Trump's night again last night. Robert Costa, national political reporter with The Washington Post. It's always great to have you right here. So grateful to you for being with us today. Thanks.
Thank you.
Claire Malone at 538 with us today from Cleveland, Ohio. Claire, thanks so much for your insights.
Thank you.
And Ken Thomas at the Associated Press covering Democrats this season. Ken, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
In this hour tomorrow, we look at the battle now over President Obama's, brand new, we'll have him by tomorrow, Supreme Court nominee. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Join us.